That was Gerard Mayo from this morning. A non-denial about the MRI situation with Drake May in the knee. May spoke about it as well. Do we have that? Do we have Drake May talking about his injury, Stiz? If we have that, let's hear that as well, because he doesn't seem particularly bothered by it. Mayo doesn't seem particularly bothered by it. Whether an MRI was taken or not, I think at this point it's leaning towards yes, there was. If there wasn't, that's an easy no. No, there was no MRI, then that's it. You move on, and that's the end of it. You only don't answer the question if you don't want to answer the question. And why wouldn't you want to answer the question? Because he had an MRI, and we don't want you to know about it. That's why. And what are the reasons for that? That's another part of this, which we're sort of sniffing around here a little bit. Either Drake May asked for the MRI, and he was the only one who did, and that the team doctors and physicians, everybody said, nah, you don't need this, but he wanted it anyway, which is, I don't know if that's alarming, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Or because there was dissent within the walls of Gillette Stadium in Foxborough between people like Gerard Mayo and people like Alex Van Pelt or Elliot Wolf or whoever was for or against the idea of Drake May starting right away or keeping him on ice for most of the year, maybe they had something to do with this MRI. And it's just that's it. And the only reason why it continues to even be a story is because everybody's getting very squirrely about it when they get asked about it. Here's Drake Maestas, if you have it. The same question.
We saw you pop up on the injury report Wednesday with a knee issue. Can you tell us when that injury happened and how you've been dealing with it?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. You know, these last 2 days, felt good out there at practice. I'm feeling good now. You're ready to go for Sunday.
Did that happen during the Texans game, or is that at practice?
Yeah, I think, you know, injuries are something that you don't really you try to share with the media, so just looking forward to Sunday.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess you don't want to tell it to the media. You can say when it happened. You're on the injury report. When did your knee start bothering you? Well, we're not talking about that.
What if it's neither of those? What if it was neither of those? What if it was at a party on Monday night?
I was out partying with Christian Barmore, and I ran out of the car before he got there, twisted my knee, and that's why I showed up in the injury report. I have no idea. I mean, if you're not going to talk about it, then that's just gonna raise people's suspicions. Exactly. It's exactly what it is. If you give us a straightforward answer to a pretty straightforward question, did you get an MRI, yes or no? We don't like talking about injuries. Okay, well, when did it start hurting? Was it during the game or practice this week? What do you want to know that for? It's like, because we want to know how serious it is. We want to know if you're going to play. We want to know if we should expect you to not maybe look like your best self in this game on Sunday. All of those things are reasonable things to want to know about your third overall pick, rookie quarterback, who so much is going to be resting on this kid's shoulders for the next 3 years. It's very reasonable to want to know that, and they're being weird. They're being shady about it.
Absolutely. The more we talk about this, the more it stinks. Because the more I piece it together, like, Gerard Mayo wouldn't say whether it was during the game or in practice. I'm not sure if it was a residual from the game. Like, you know, you have meetings. Like, head coaches have meetings with medical staff, trainers, doctors, everybody. And then Drake May doesn't want to tell you when it happened. Like, I feel like this is even above and beyond Belichickian. I feel like over the years, players would be like, yeah, something just didn't feel right in the game. Or if something just didn't feel, whatever.
Yeah.
This feels like, and the more we talk about it, the more it annoys me, because, like, people are going to get mad at us for being jackasses on the radio and speculating about something you don't. Well, we are, because that's what we do.
We are jackasses on the radio, guys. I mean, come on.
And they're being weird. They are not answering the questions when they are supposedly embarking on a grand new era of answering questions and being transparent. And this is beyond Belichickian lack of transparency. You don't know if it was from the game. The guy who coaches the team and the player himself won't tell us whether it was game or practice. That just leads you to think, oh my God, something happened between the game and practice, and it's some weird, I don't know, personal issue or something. Something stinks here. The more we look into this, the more it smells fishy.
Yeah, it really does. Mike Reese had this yesterday. He said, starting left tackle Vedarian Lowe has been downgraded to out for Sunday's game against the Jaguars. Lowe had an MRI on Monday, according to Gerard Mayo. I thought we don't talk about MRIs. I thought we don't talk about injuries. I thought can't even ask about that sort of thing. A source said the MRI came back as expected, an ankle sprain, and Lowe is expected back in the near future. If you had said that about a guy who, by the way, you haven't limited in practice in any way, hasn't missed a snap in practice the whole week, he's been a full participant, and you only even put him on the thing in the first place, probably because he got an MRI, and you can't just give a guy an MRI and then say, oh, yeah, well, we're going to leave you off the injury report. Even as a full participant, you have to put something there, and I think that's exactly what happened. If I was to put on my detective hat and break down all of this, if it sounds to me like it wasn't something that happened in the game. I don't think that he was hurt in the knee in the game. It looked like when he got knocked out of the game, and it wasn't even really, he didn't miss a series or anything, but there was sort of, all right, May is back into the game now after he came out for that next series after he got sacked by Hunter. That looked like maybe something, but that was upper body. That was an upper body situation, shoulder, elbow, whatever. Nothing with the knee. So if I was to put together a timeline here, I would say at some point in practice this week, he banged up his knee somehow, whether it was he planted funny or he was running or someone hit him or what. I have no idea. But something happened with the knee. He did get an MRI because they haven't denied it. And I feel like if he didn't get it, they'd easily deny it. And it would be no skin off anyone's nose except for Ben Volans. And then and that's it. Basically, that's it. It wasn't anything that showed up on it. They didn't have any reason to limit him in practice. His knee may be a little discomfort going on there, but nothing's going to keep him out of the game or keep him from taking all the practice reps or anything that he needs to do to get ready for it. And that's that. And that is a very innocent explanation. Now, if it's something more than that, that they're trying to furiously cover up here, then okay. But it doesn't really seem like it. It just seems like they're being overly cautious, overly secretive. And whenever you do that, it just points to shadiness. It just points to something that it's not above board. We don't want you to know about this. We're going to keep this quiet. Well, you don't keep other guys' MRIs quiet. You don't keep everybody else's injury status quiet. Why only this guy? What's going on here?
And that's the problem with setting a precedent. And then when you deviate from that precedent, people wonder why. And that's, right. That's to me, my biggest issue is the fact that Gerard Mayo has been open about imaging and MRIs and things this season multiple times. As Mike Reese points out, even low situation this week, he was matter of fact with it. And I'm not saying it's necessarily something like nefarious. I mean, maybe they're just covering it up out of like convenience. Maybe he slipped in the shower after the game on Sunday, right? Like, that can happen.
Been there.
And sometimes it and sometimes it leads to just like embarrassing stories that people roll their eyes and they don't really believe, so you why waste people's time and start that? So they tried to cover it up. And again, if Ben Volan hadn't gotten the information, we'd be in a whole different world.
We wouldn't even be talking about it.
Right. We'd be saying, oh, he's limited, but he must have just tweaked something in the game, but it's nothing to worry about. Guys are on the practice field, full participation all the time, whatever. But the MRI information that Ben got, good for him, brought this to a little bit of a different level, and now the more they talk about it, the old saying, the cover-up is worse than the crime. Not that there was a crime here that I'm alleging, but the cover-up seems worse than the whatever actually happened. Like, whatever. He's going to play Sunday. Isn't that all we really care about?
Yeah, that should be all that matters. Yeah, you know what? He got a little banged up in practice. He had a little knee thing, but it's fine. We got it looked at. No, nothing to report. He's a full participant, and he's going to play, and we expect him to start and have a great game. Like, that's a very easy thing to go up there and say, and the fact that they're not saying that and instead being very, very mysterious is mysterious. I mean, it just is. I'm sorry. That's a reflection of the energy that they're giving out, and I don't know how else you can look at it. But yeah, I hope anyway this isn't going to be a big problem, but I will be watching for when he's out there running around, because guess what? You're not playing in Foxborough. You're not playing in the United States. You're out there at Wembley Stadium on unfamiliar turf, and I feel like guys with knee problems, you know, this is a bad place to be. If you're out there on an unfamiliar field with maybe different turf conditions than you're used to, trying to run around, trying to run an offense, doing all that stuff with a bad knee, I mean, that raises some concerns.
Absolutely, and that has been historically an issue. I think they had issues in some of the other, but I feel like last week at Wembley, I don't remember hearing anybody say anything about the turf in a bad way. I don't remember really any comments at all, which leads me to believe that it was just sort of a normal playing surface that they were fine with.
The Brazil game, though, right? Didn't a couple guys go down with injuries in Brazil?
Yeah, bad. Yep. I think the Mexico game the Patriots had a few years ago, people weren't happy with the field. So it is a common thing with these international games when they try to, you know, put a football field on a soccer pitch or whatever the hell they do. But I don't think that it's probably going to be an issue this week, but people are going to be watching. I'm sure Dr. Chow will have a video after the game on Sunday, something about the knee, right? Because he knows people care about it. He knows people are talking about it. They'll watch his video. They'll click on his Twitter and Instagram and all that. So, yeah, I don't think it's a big deal, the injury. It almost feels like the injury is less a deal of, then what are you covering up? What are we doing here?
Right.
It's almost like a kid who did something dumb, and then in trying to cover it up, did like way dumber stuff. And your dad's like, I wouldn't have grounded you if you had just told me the first thing, but now all this other idiocy, you're grounded.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if anything more comes from this. We'll see if there's any more to it. I hope there isn't. I just hope that we all can move on with our lives and that it was just sort of an awkward thing that became a bigger thing than it needed to be because of the way questions were answered. And that could be as simple as that. We'll find out, I guess, this weekend. We'll find out on Sunday. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Drake May was asked why people in England should root for the Patriots. He had a good answer. What are you rooting for out there? Do you want this team to even win this game? And also, we will get to our Week 7 picks. All of that coming up right after Stiz. Get you caught on what's trending for the last time today. Drake May, with reasons to root for the Patriots. Mayo was asked this question, too. He had a similar answer. In fact, he said, what you're seeing right now could be the beginning of the next dynasty, or will be the beginning of the next dynasty. I mean,
you buying?
No, not really. Although I'm not sure I would have looked at the 2000 Patriots, who were 5-11, and thought that that was going to have any of the elements of the next dynasty. Even though Brady was on that team, no one knew it at the time, and no one had any idea that it was going to become what it was, despite there being some good players on that team, as we said. I mean, Belichick, and there was a call on the line that we didn't get to in time. They hung up, but there was a call on the line, and it was a good subject line that Belichick inherited a better roster than Gerard Mayo did. I think that's 100% true.
Oh, it's not even close.
Much, much better. Much, much better.
Way better.
And
now, there were issues. There were, like, salary cap issues and different things, but 100%. He inherited team and or pro football Hall of Famers. Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I guess you could argue that Mayo inherited one potential Hall of Famer, Christian Gonzalez.
Christian Gonzalez a Hall of Famer now?
I'm just potential.
Okay. I mean, I guess, yeah, the guys on this team, if you're gonna tag anybody like that, it would probably be him, I would say. Yeah,
or even team Hall of Famer. Let's just go team Hall of Famer. Christian Gonzalez is trending toward that, right? It's early, way too early, but he's trending toward being a team Hall of Famer. Belichick inherited Ted Johnson, Teddy Bruschi, Willie McGinnis, Ty Law, Lawyer Malloy, Adam Vinatieri. I mean, it's a decade of team Hall of Famers if you do one.
Even guys
year.
Like Terry Glenn, who we got rid of. I mean, that was a good receiver. He was a productive receiver.
Drew Bledsoe. He at least had a quarterback. Like, he may not have loved him, and he may have been on the back nine, but he had a quarterback. Yeah, it's not even a comparison. Not even a close comparison. Holy
inherited
crap.
OTIS. Inherited Tobucky. Inherited, that's about it. I think you named everybody else. But yeah, there you go. There's a couple other names there I wanted to throw in. I just like saying OTIS whenever I get the opportunity to. That's always funny to me. That was always funny. Just something to look forward to. And the few times that you saw him in prime time, and he was the starter. So there you go. Are you worried about the Drake May injury? And also, are you rooting for the Patriots to go out and win this game? And I ask you that, Andy. I know that you would like to see May play well and the team lose. Do I have that right?
First of all, I want to see him look healthy. Put that away early in the game. Like, oh, my God, he is limping out there. There is something wrong. No, put that away.
By the way, a bunch of texters are pointing this out. There was one play where he did limp off the field after one of the sacks. That's true. He wasn't limping after that. You know, after that, it seemed like he was moving around okay, and that was early enough in the game that it didn't seem like it. I was watching that. I was watching to see if it would continue. But after that, I didn't see him limping at all, and no one really did. So, I don't know. I mean, it sounds to me like it happened later in the week. But it could have been in the game. I have no idea. No one knows, and we don't know because they're being weird about it.
It could be weird on any level. You know what it could be as simple as? Maybe the May family is weird about it. I brought this up yesterday, a little Gronkowski comparison, but there are still people that believe in privacy and believe like HIP is a thing. I know it's not really a thing in professional sports, but like, I don't want people to know about my son. Maybe this comes from his parents. They're like, no, like there's no rule that says everybody needs to know everything about your health and your mobility, whatever. Who knows? There could be a million things. But first of all, I want to see him look healthy, first drive, first snaps. Second of all, I want to see him sling it all over the field. I want to see him throw from play one. I want to be, again, you know what they ran last night in the Saints game? Now, it didn't end out well, but the first play to Spencer Rattler was a play-action boot, quick little throw to the tight end for, like, I don't know, 15, 20 yards. And I was like, that's what you do when you have a young mobile quarterback. Make him feel good. Throw it to a big tight end. Make an easy throw. I want them throwing the ball from the get-go. I want, in the first drive, I want more throws than runs. I don't care about the three and outs that everybody was worried about. Oh, I got to go three and out with 10 seconds off the clock. I don't care. It's the beginning of the game. It's two crappy teams.
And they're probably going three and out if they run the ball, too. So, you
right.
know, like, what do you want?
Like, just throw the ball, get him going. And, yeah, I want them to look good. I want him to challenge Dan Marino with three touchdowns in his first two NFL starts to tie that record. And I want them to lose so that they can get the first pick in next April's NFL draft and draft Kelvin Banks, the tackle out of Texas, because I just don't see what the – can you feel good about a loss? No, even better than last week. I know a lot of people felt good about the loss last week, but to me, if you go toe-to-toe with Trevor Lawrence and they both throw for 304 touchdowns or whatever and you just lose on a last-second field goal, 45-42, the score I gave earlier, mm-hmm. there's no shame in that. And I think most people will be icky-balooky, like Dale Arnold, to just be excited to see what is building before their eyes with Drake May. So
You've said that a few times. What is that?
I don't know. Ask Dale. Probably a main thing.
It sounds gross.
Dale here.
It does. It sounds, whatever it is, it sounds disgusting.
Dale's my guy.
That's
Dale's
true. I love Dale. I've never heard that. I don't remember him using that phrase.
Listen, you say mollywopped, so he can say icky balooky.
That is a super common term, mollywopped. I'm so surprised Andy doesn't know.
Whoa. There's no chance it's super common.
It's more common than icky balooky.
I don't know about it. It honestly sounds like something from a porno, but I honestly don't know that.
Come on, clean it up.
Is that not what it sounds like? Is that not what that sounds like?
I don't know what it sounds. I don't even know if it's a real word.
When Dale says it.
He may have made it up for all I know, but
he may have. Yes, true. By the way, we got a very, very angry text message from the 603 saying, honestly, you guys were either too young or too drunk to know what was going on in 2000. I know you're doing a lot of covering for Gerard Mayo because he's likable, and you guys shot Belichick out of town, so that combination is going to make you look the other way and a lot of bad coaching, and that's one of the other reasons why I will lose it, not just the roster, but the coaching. And Belichick didn't have $50 million in cap in 2000, which you have right now. We're not talking about what he did in the offseason. We're talking about what he inherited.
Yeah.
The two rosters that were inherited. Bill Belichick is a much better coach probably than Gerard Mayo will ever be in 10 lifetimes. No one's
probably
saying that. We're talking about the teams, the rosters they inherited. And there's no debate that the 2000 roster had better players on it than this roster. I mean, that's just an obvious fact, Texter. I don't know how you could argue anything other than that. I mean, if you think we're covering for Mayo, fine. I think we've been ripping them pretty good this year so far. But either way, that has nothing to do with what we're talking. We're talking about rosters that they inherited in their first year in New England, and it is not even really that close. Mayo's is much worse, much worse.
Sadly, that's a listener that clearly didn't hear the debut of the Patriots Pillars power rankings.
That's
when
true.
I put coaching at number 5.
You did.
I think the coaching is the worst part of this team moving forward. I have the least amount of confidence in the coaching. That's Gerard Mayo, but he or she are either too old or they were too drunk at the time to realize that Bill Belichick inherited a boatload of team Hall of Famers and some pro football Hall of Famers when he got to New England and went 5-11 and then turned things around and had that whole. That's the other thing. He didn't really go out and spend like crazy. If you remember, they were called the Kmart class of free agents,
right.
The blue light special class of free agents, because they were all Mike Vrabel, Mike Compton, all these kind of journeymen.
Diamonds in the rough kind of guys, right?
Yeah,
exactly. They weren't high-priced guys, for sure.
Right. And then it ended up working out, in large part, in my opinion, because all the studs were good. Teddy Bruschi and Ty Law and Lawyer Malloy and all those guys that he inherited
yep.
were really good. So I don't even know how we got into this whole debate. We took the bait. A texter sent a text, and we took the bait.
Yeah, well, I mean, we baited the texter. The texter baited us back, and now we're in a bait-off, which sounds like something that ends
yep,
with icky.
Don't
icky
do that.
Balooky.
Don't do that. Nope.
There you go.
We're not doing that.
You
all
are
right.
The master.
Thank you very
much.
Nope,
we're not doing
say,
that.
I would say so. All right, let's get – I don't even want to do this because I had such a bad week last week, but let's get to some picks for Week 7.
Okay, last week – Andy's record was 3-3-1.
Pretty good. Respectable.
I'll take it.
Respectable.
I'll take it.
500. You're maybe losing a little bit there on the rake with the odds or whatever, but that's
right.
better than being hard in the red, which is where I think I am.
Arcand was 2-4-1.
Not good. Well, that's only one pick worse than him. You made it sound like I had a really, really bad week.
Arcand's,
you're a loser. Loser.
Arcand's big mistake was picking the New York Jets.
Yeah, never again. Never again. Even though they're favored on the road against Pittsburgh, and it's Russell Wilson's first game this week. If that's one of the games on the slate, you can already put me down for Pittsburgh. What do we got this week, Jake?
Okay, first up, Lions at Vikings. The Vikings are favored by 1.5.
Lions and Vikings, 1.5 points going to Minnesota. As much as I like Minnesota's defense, I feel like Detroit is really hot right now, and I'm sort of surprised to see them as underdogs, even going up against a team as good as Minnesota. I'm going to go with Detroit here. I really like what they're doing.
I am going to go with the Minnesota Vikings. I think there might be a little fall off, let down, whatever, from the Aiden Hutchinson injury here. I think that's a concern for them, and I know Dan Campbell's like, oh, next man up. No, not next man. Like, there's nobody
he's
that's going
to
do.
Tough to replace, yeah.
Yeah, irreplaceable. So give me the Vikings.
All right, next up, biggest spread of the week. The Bills are favored by 9.5 at home against the Titans.
This one, this is going to be Amari Cooper's first game. He practiced with them this week. He's going to be available to go. He's going to go out there. I like the over in this game, which is not the question, but I'm still going to go with Buffalo. I'm going to go with Buffalo by a couple of scores here. Tennessee has just been such a mess. I don't think this is the game where they turn it around, and I think Buffalo is going to get a big lead and just sort of compound it and keep things out of reach there, and I think Cooper has a good game in his debut with Buffalo. I think this is all going to work out pretty well for them, and I know that betting on Buffalo lately hasn't been a great move just with the spread. But I like him. I like him a lot here in this spot.
Yeah, I like Josh Allen. I like the Bills, and it's a big number that I have a little hesitance.
If it was double digits, I might go Tennessee, but it's not. So.
And then I go, Will Levis will do something to help my cause late in the game. So give me the Bills.
Okay, next up, the Cincinnati Bengals are at the Cleveland Browns, and they're favored by 6.
Bengals. I think the Bengals, this is where they start the turnaround. Adam Schefter wanted me to know the entire Bengals schedule. He read it for me.
Right, yeah, that was
word
fun.
For word the other day.
He either was looking at it or he's very up to speed on that stuff.
It was front and center in his mind or in his eyes or something. But and the Browns are a mess. The Browns stink. They're not going to bench, I guess, Deshaun Watson. They're stuck with him. So give me Joe Burrow and the Bengals. And, who plays on the Bengals? T. Higgins, future Patriots number one wide receiver. Pick him, take him.
Does play on the Bengals. That's true. And I know this is boring because these are picks we're going against each other in, but I love Cincinnati here, too. I'm not picking Cleveland. No way. Even though I know it's a division game and these games are always close, especially in that division, I feel like they beat the crap out of each other. So I may like the under or something. But, yeah, I'm not going Cleveland here. I'm going with Cincy, and I'm going by at least one touchdown, yeah.
Seahawks at Falcons. The Falcons are favored by 3 points.
All right, I'm going Seattle here. I don't believe in the Falcons. I think that the Falcons are a paper tiger, and whenever they go up against a real team, it seems like they have trouble. I'm going to go ahead and say that I don't know if Seattle wins this game because they've not looked great lately either, but I think that they can go in there and they can beat Atlanta and at the very least get within 3 points.
I don't believe in either of these birds, so I'm going to take the home bird to cover. I also think there's the Seahawks are kind of, what was the word, Evan Lazar? Teetering? I think they're teetering. I think DK Metcalf is teetering. I think there's some teetering going on in that Seahawks locker room. So give me the Falcons to cover.
Okay, and I'm just looking at the Falcons' schedule right now. They lost to the Chiefs and the Steelers. They did beat the Eagles in that Week 2 game, and they have a win over the Buccaneers, the only two real teams. Their other wins are against the Saints, the Panthers, and that's it. So I think the Seahawks stop them in their track. The game is in Atlanta, which should be advantageous for them, but I don't know. I have a good feeling about Seattle this week. Take that for how you want to. I went 2-4-1 last week.
The old good feeling line of thought.
The Eagles, in Saquon's return to MetLife Stadium, face off against the MetLife Stadium turf and the New York Giants. The Eagles are favored by 3.5.
Ooh, there's a hook on that now. I think that moved. I think it was 3 earlier. That hook scares me a little bit. And I really don't believe in the Eagles, but I do think that this is a game where Barkley's going to go out there, he's going to get booed, and he's going to get mad. And I think he's going to have a big game, and I don't think the Giants can keep up with him. So give me the Eagles here. I don't love that it's 3.5. I would have been a lot happier at 3 or even 2.5, which I think is what it opened at, which is kind of wild if you think about it, considering the relative talent on both of these teams. But, yeah, I still like Philly.
Yeah, Philly is the most frustrating team. They're frustrating to their coach, their fans, their owner, the whole damn thing. But Saquon Barkley, I need him to get back rolling a little bit here for my Offensive Player of the Year prop that I did. And I think he does it. I think you're right. I think the the personal nature between him and what's his name? Joe Schoen, yes, the GM. I think that plays a factor in here. I'm going to say Saquon gets 3 touchdowns in this game. Give me the Eagles.
Okay.
All right. Kansas City Chiefs visit the San Francisco 49ers, who are favored by 1.5.
This one's interesting. Super Bowl rematch. I think that the Niners are going to want to come out and play a big, strong, tough game. And I think that the Chiefs are going to just beat them like they always do at the last second. I think it'll be more than a point. And even so, they're the underdogs. So, yeah, give me Kansas City here.
I will take the 49ers, the fighting Brock Purdy's. I don't think the Chiefs are playing great football. And I know it's always dumb. You know, people said it over here, you don't bet against Belichick and Brady. Don't bet against Mahomes and Reed. I'm going to bet against Mahomes and Reed. I think they're not good enough to go undefeated this year. They're not playing good enough football to go undefeated early in the year. They're scuffling a little bit. Their quarterback is just getting by. And I think in this game, he doesn't do enough to get by.
All right. First loss of the year for Kansas City.
Yep.
Andy is predicting it. All right, we got any more?
We got one more, and it's my favorite pick of the week. The New York Jets against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Jets are favored by 1.5. The question is, will Arcan pick the Jets?
No, I'm picking Russell Wilson. I'm picking Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's going to go out there. He's going to connect with George Pickens, and we're all going to forget about Rodgers and Adams. It's going to be the Russ and Pickens show in Seattle, or not in Seattle, in Pittsburgh. And there's no way I'm picking the Jets again. Every time I pick the Jets, they lose, or they don't cover the spread, or something, and I look stupid. I'm not doing it anymore. Screw you, gangrene. Give me Russell Wilson in his debut this season against with the Steelers against New York.
Tay, as they call him, Devontae Adams, is the elixir that heals all for Aaron Rodgers. He feels good.
He's the ayahuasca of that team.
Yep, the ayahuasca, whatever you want to call it. He's the dark place. He's the good things. Everything about it. He is the bump. They didn't get the coaching bump. They get the Devontae Adams bump. And Pittsburgh has a good coach. Pittsburgh has a good defense. I don't think their offense is all that good. And Najee Harris is coming off a big game. He doesn't have a lot of big games back-to-back unless suddenly he's finding himself in, like, year 5 or whatever the hell this is, year 4 for him. So give me the Jets to put it together. I think the Jets win this comfortably.
All right, and there's one last game. Let's do a pick here for the Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Last, I agree.
I saw on FanDuel it was at 5.5, Andy. What do you think?
I'm going to take the points. I think this is going to be a dogfight. I actually think the Patriots probably lose. I think this is going to go back and forth, a little competitive, probably in the 20s. I think I said on the podcast like 20-17 or 24-21, somewhere in there. But I think the Patriots can absolutely play with the Jags. Drake May is going to do what rookie quarterbacks, young quarterbacks do. He's going to make more plays than mistakes, but he will make mistakes, and that might end up being the difference in the end.
I'm going to take the Patriots to cover the 5.5, and I even may consider going full money line with them. Ooh. I think they win this game. The Jaguars' defense is so bad, and the Patriots' defense, I think, is not as bad as they've looked. I think this is a get-right game for the Patriots' defense, a turnover or two, and I think you could see something similar to what Chicago did. You know, you get a couple of short fields here for Drake May, and I think they could win something like 27-17 or 27-13, something along those lines. I think that's the direction I'm going to go with it. I think the Patriots score. I think Jacksonville continues to struggle, and I also think Doug Peterson might get fired by the end of the weekend. So there you go. Those are our Week 7 picks here in the NFL. If you missed any of that, we'll probably revisit some of them on Sunday morning with WEEI Football Sunday, which will be coming your way bright and early at the crack of 7 a.m. with myself, with Megan Ottolini and Chris Scheim in studio. We'll talk to Andy Hart. We'll talk with Fitzy. We will talk with Tommy Curran and get Wiggy's keys to the game. That's all something to look forward to if you're on your way to go watch the game somewhere. Are they doing like what they do with soccer games when there's like an early game and the bars all open at like 6 a.m.? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
For those like, you know, Serie A games and stuff. Like, is there any bars around here going to be doing that for the Patriots? I wonder.
I bet you there are. I bet you. Why wouldn't you? I mean, it seems like an opportunity to make some money, right?
Certainly.
Certainly
would be.
Money.
All right. Well, without any further ado, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll wrap things up with This Week in Social Media. All right. Two quick notes here before we get to This Week in Social Media. Hashtag Twism. No, not the Shaq thing that was big in the 90s, that clothing line that he had, which stood for The World Is Mine. No. This is This Week in Social Media. It just happens to have the same initials. And since the Shaq thing doesn't exist anymore, I feel like I'm okay with that. One note, ayahuasca. I keep saying ayahuasca. I don't know why. I'm so lame. I'm such a square. I have no idea what these things are that people are doing.
Sure, you don't trip
balls these days. I have no idea. Ayahuasca. Apologies out there to the tripping community. And also, this is the only text I got about this, about any bars around here that are open early for the Patriots game. Donahue's in Watertown, which I love Donahue's. I used to live in Watertown. I used to go over there all the time. It's a great little bar. And I think one of our old interns works there, I think. This guy, Will, that was an intern here, I think he was working there, and I kept saying, oh, I got to get back to Donahue's. It's hard to just go out to the bar after work when I live very far away and have a two-year-old at home. But that's definitely a place to go. If they're going to be open early and showing the game and you are in the area, go down there and ask for Will and tell him Arkan sent you over at Donahue's. So there you go. All right, with that in mind, let's get to it. It is time for This Week in Social Media.
This Week in Social Media with Arkan and Hart on WEEI.
All right, This Week in Social Media, we go back over everything that happened on the world of Twitter, not calling it X, also Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, Friendster, MySpace, whatever you want. And we'll start with something that happened on Twitter, and it is a new function that is being revised. I'm not sure who this is for. I'm very confused as to why this is happening. You might have seen it, Andy. There was a big, it was like a pop-up thing when you logged in first to see it. The block feature is going to change. Elon Musk confirmed that changes are coming for X's Twitter's block feature, a previously simple and obvious function of any social media website to protect users and prevent harassment. Now those are being kind of thrown out the window because, I don't know, it seems like Elon Musk doesn't like that he's blocked by a lot of people, and so he wants to get himself unblocked. Now, you're not going to be unblocking completely. What's going to happen now is that if you have somebody blocked, they still can't interact with your tweets anymore, but they can see them. They can now see them, but they can't respond to them. They can't retweet them. They can't quote tweet them. They can't like them. They can't do any of that stuff, but they can look at them. As previously, when you block somebody, they just couldn't see anything that you did ever again. Now, this brings up some questions about some of the low quality people like stalkers and stuff like that, and there's a lot of prominent, you know, public figures, I'm not talking about myself here, but you know, other people who are worried about things like that, who are not very happy about this, and I just don't really understand what the point of it is. Who is this for? Who are you doing this for?
Elon.
Why shouldn't you be able to block, other than Elon Musk, who is this benefiting?
Me.
If you block, how does it benefit you?
Because Mike Florio got really mad at me like 10 years ago and blocked me on Pro Football Talk's Twitter account. And it's really annoying that I get people send me like Pro Football Talk tweets and stuff, and like I can't see it. I'd like to just know what their headlines are. They're like, oh, did you see this on Pro Football Talk? No, I can't see Pro Football Talk. So it actually benefits me. Now I will be able to see the headlines on Pro Football Talk.
Do you have anybody blocked?
No.
You're not a blocker?
Nope.
You've never blocked anybody?
I don't believe I've ever blocked anybody.
Wow.
He just sends panda emojis.
I do. I send panda emojis, and it freaks people out. They don't know how to take it.
Okay, so you want to see more of Mike Florio, which is not something you hear very often, but fine. That's something that you'd like to see. You think that'll benefit you. I don't understand. Like, Mike Florio blocked you for a reason, so I don't understand how this benefits him or how this benefits anybody who's blocked somebody else, because you generally don't just block someone for no reason. And I don't know what happened with you guys, but the people that I have blocked for, you know, terrible things or saying and posting horrible things or whatever. And I just, you know, it seems like that's the easy way to go about it. You don't get to do this anymore, and they still can't interact with me. But I just don't understand why they need to be,
I don't either,
given this access to something that I'm trying to block. Now, there was also a whole thing with the app stores, because app stores won't carry certain apps unless they have protections in place to let people block other people, because they don't want it to be unsafe. They don't want stalking and stuff like that to happen. So this was the best compromise. I think he wanted to just take away blocks forever, but they said, well, we're not going to carry your app in the store anymore unless you give people that option. And so it's this new thing, which, again, I think is pretty stupid. But hey, at least Andy Hart gets to read more of Mike Florio's fine work.
Yeah.
All right. There's also this. TikTok right now, there is a wave going on TikTok, which, again, I'm very new to TikTok. I just signed up this year. It's very overwhelming. There is a thing which I have not discovered yet. I only read about this today. Have you heard of kindness influencers? Do you know what that is?
Nope.
Do you guys back there know about kindness influencers?
I've never heard this term, but I think we've seen this a lot where people will do things strictly for social media, like give a homeless man $1,000.
Exactly.
Or, you know what I mean?
Oh. It's exactly
we
what
saw it,
is.
A lot during the pandemic where there were videos of like a girl would pull up in like a Tesla to a boarded up building, get out, stand in front of the building with like a screw gun or something, have someone take a picture, then get right back in her Tesla and leave.
Right, yeah. To show like, hey, I'm here helping out. Yeah. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And a lot of times, yeah, it's walking up to a homeless person or a street person or something, giving them $100 and then being like, I'm a kindness influencer. I don't like influencers at all. I don't like any influencers. I think one thing we pride ourselves on the show, Andy, is we don't tell you how to think. You know, we tell you what we think, but we're not telling you. I guess you do that sometimes. You tell people
what?
How they should feel about Drake May and who they should root for and stuff. So, yeah, I guess
you do it, too, about Swayman.
I didn't tell people how to think about Swayman. I told you how I felt about Swayman. That's different. But either way, these people I have no use for. I'm sorry. I know that for giving homeless people things, it's a nice thing to do. But they're only doing it just to get famous on the internet. They don't have any real stake in it. If they cared about doing that, they'd go around and do it without their camera out, without trying to be a star. And also, without putting someone who's in a bad situation themselves on camera without their consent. That's another big part of this that I don't really like. So these kindness influencers deserve the crap that they're getting, and I don't like, you know, just influencers in general I have no use for. I really don't. I think that their entire existence is very empty, and this whole thing is just, it's gross, you know? Exploiting people who are struggling just to get likes on the internet. Like, I have no use for that whatsoever.
But hasn't this been around for a long time? Like, is it really? There's a lot of people that do good things, but make sure the media finds out, or make sure pictures
right.
make their way into the newspaper or film crews.
Yeah, oh, screw those people too. Yeah,
I didn't know there was going to be a film crew here while I was handing out meals or something at the soup kitchen. I think this has been going on for a long time. It's why one of the things I've always liked about Bill Belichick is he does a lot of good things that go like unknown,
absolutely
totally unknown. Mm-hmm. I've heard it even locally down my way, like in New Bedford, he. Like has donated so much to the youth football teams and the youth lacrosse teams. Like you never hear about it. It's not like a big deal. It's just like, oh, they need 100 pair of shoulder pads. Well, Bill Belichick just sent over 100 pair of shoulder pads.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, he does a lot of that stuff. And I think those people are the true philanthropists.
Those
are the true good people, not, oh, I'm doing this for either likes in the media or likes on some social media. Although I will say, like, Mr. Beast was one of those. I watched a lot of the videos early on with Mr. Beast.
But didn't he make people do stuff to get the money? Like, wasn't there, like, challenges?
Nothing, like, crazy, though.
No, but it's, like, it's evolved. Like, I remember he did one where he was, like, buying a house, told the guy he was buying a house and, like, basically hired a homeless man to help him move and get furniture and stuff for a house. And then at the end of the video, he goes, oh, by the way, the keys are yours, and just walks out and just leaves him the house and the furniture and the kitchen and all the appliance, like, became his house.
Recently, so, he cured, like, I think it was, like, 1,000 blind people. He made a video where...
Because he cured blind people?
Yeah, well, because the surgery was, like,
I don't know.
The surgery, let's say, was $5,000, right? So
right.
I think he went to, I think it was Africa, maybe, and yeah, he let 1,000 people get that surgery, and wow, then he got crap for it.
See, but that's where that fine line is. Like, we were kind of giving crap, like, oh, you don't need to do it, but that's his business, right? Like, he's reinvesting, right, the capital. He gets all the money off of YouTube and whatever the hell else he gets.
Yeah, I think what
followers.
Mr. Beast does, though, is very different than some of these other
okay.
people.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd agree with that. And people who just walk up and give a guy a sandwich and then turn around and say, hey, look at me, aren't I great? I just, you know, right. I don't have
like
any
the kid I love speed. He's like a super famous TikTok person.
I don't know who
he went to New York and like stood on a car and had a bag of like ones and just threw it, and it caused a pandemonium in New York City.
Jesus.
And, you know, people got hurt, etc. So,
all right. Well, yeah. Again, influencers, except in very rare instances, no use for them. And these guys see right through you, kindness influencers. You're not kindness influencers. You're just trying to get more likes. That's all it's about. That's all the time we have here on an edition of This Week in Social Media and this edition of the show, another week in the books. We will be back on Sunday, 7 a.m., bright and early. You'll hear me, Mego, Chris Scheim, Andy Hart, also Fitzy, Tommy Curran, and Jermaine Wiggins, Coach Wiggy's Keys, as we get you ready for